on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. If you want to see some photos of today's guest, Leon Christensen, pull up Hometown Heroes Radio on Facebook or go to hometownheroesradio.com. You'll even find a photo of this Navy musician carrying a wounded soldier on a stretcher. That photo appeared in the Saturday Evening Post, among other publications. It was taken during the Battle of Cherbourg, June 25th, 1944, which is what we were just getting into when we left off. So you said shells started hitting the water. That's what triggered general quarters. And pretty soon those shells were hitting your ship.
We took two hits, one on the conning tower, which we lost a man there, and wounded several. Conning tower, in case you wonder or don't know, is the main tower that goes up on the ship, and decks are built around it. The shell hit just below one of the decks, and my friend, his name was Christensen, got killed on that one. And then a while later, we took another shell, went through the hull of our ship, and landed in a compartment right close to where I was. We didn't know about it, and it didn't explode.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dud. Had it exploded, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today.
Yeah. And in fact, you can see that unexploded shell, and I think maybe your son did when he visited the USS Texas. Mm-hmm. It's on display. Where else but the Lone Star State? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this. Just to clarify for people, this is a couple weeks after D-Day, almost 3 weeks after. And while I mentioned D-Day, so much has been written about June 6th. And there were so many elements of it. You've got the planes overhead, the paratroopers and gliders behind enemy lines, the guys who are hitting the shore, and obviously all of you on over 700 ships between the Americans and the British that morning. But the moniker that has stuck is the longest day.
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel that way to you?
Oh, yeah, I guess it did in a way. Again, I'm just a young kid yet. I didn't take anything as serious as an older person might have. I wasn't scared.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't scared. I don't know how to explain how I felt.
But on that day, there wasn't a whole lot of damage on your ship.
No.
But here you are. No damage, which is pretty incredible considering where you were and what was going on. But here you get a couple weeks later at Cherbourg, and the Germans are hitting your ship. And you mentioned that the first casualty, the first to die on your ship, was named Christensen, mm-hmm. Kristen Christensen.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually knew him? You
guys, very well, yes.
Because of the common surname? Is that what brought you together?
No, I could be.
Yeah.
Could be. We met each other. We weren't close buddies or anything, but acquaintances.
Well, and so often I talk to veterans, and they all have moments where, you know, it could have been me. Maybe I wouldn't have come home, and you just described them for me. But it seems to me that when one of the guys on your ship dies, it's a friend of yours, and he has the same name as you. How do you not feel like that could have been me?
It really hurt.
Uh-huh. Was there anything that helped you deal with that?
Well, as working with the corpsman, I had to go up and help get him down and a couple of the wounded from this deck that had been blown up. So the shell hit just below and it exploded up, you know, and it snapped his legs off, bled to death. He got taken down, but he never recovered. But the feeling was terrible to see a friend like that. But it would have been the same, I think, for anybody to see one of your buddies go down.
Well, and I've got to imagine you've never experienced anything like this. I mean, you've done dirty jobs on the dairy, but coming face-to-face with this kind of carnage.
Yep, that's right. It was really an experience.
How'd you deal with that? How did you keep evacuating the wounded and carrying on with your tasks in the midst of that?
Well, it's just something that we knew we had to do, and I think it's a frame of mind. I saw guys that were, you know, that I thought were real tough sailors and actually break down under fire, especially at Cherbourg when we got hit and lost it, you know. And some way I was able to be calm about it. And when I saw those shells splashing in the water and then they sound GQ, which is get to general quarters right away, I think I was fairly calm about it. To say I wasn't scared, I guess I was afraid a little bit, but not too much. It's just something we knew we had to do.
And I read one account that said that there were about 65 near misses.
Yes.
Shells that almost hit the Texas.
Almost hit us. We only got hit by two.
And then there's the one that didn't explode.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you want to talk about a close call, This is a 240 millimeter shell.
Yes.
That's a big sucker. And you said that the room where it was found was close to where you had
been?
Yes,
very close. Almost as I remember the layout there in the next compartment down from where we were.
And you were in there when it hit?
Yeah. That's where I was, waiting to be called. Because I didn't know when it hit, because it was a dud and it didn't go off, and I didn't make that much. But it hit above the water line, so it didn't. No water came in the ship.
No one even knew it was there until later.
No, later.
Yeah.
No.
That's got to be quite the realization when you see that.
Yes. And I got called up to help on the deck up above with my friend Christensen and a few others that got wounded.
When this exchange is finally over, when the firing finally stops, were you still busy with caring for wounded? What were you doing?
I was working with the meds on that as long as I could. And then they got transferred off our ship. And I don't know what happened to the man that I carried down. I know that he was badly hurt in his eye area. He had his hands in his eyes like this, and he was unconscious. He was a ranger.
And you had to carry him to be transferred to?
They brought him out in a small boat alongside our ship. There were several, but we brought out a couple, three or four maybe. And I got this one, and we carried him down to what we call sick bay on the ship, but it was our hospital down there. That probably affected me a lot, because I thought, here he is, he's unconscious, he can't talk, but he has his hands over his eyes like this. I didn't know whether he had his eyes hit or what, but we delivered him down and came back up. I don't know how many were brought on, but I know that the one that I carried was a ranger.
So you're carrying all this out, and you're carrying this wounded man. I'm sure there's all kinds of emotions running through your brain, but you just have to keep going and keep working. When did you find out that this image of you carrying a wounded ranger on your ship in June of 44 was in the Saturday Evening Post for the whole country to see?
I didn't know until the doctor, the head doctor on our ship, told me. And he's the one that always told me every time I went into battle after that, that to look my photogenic best. Making fun of me, of course. But that's when I found out, probably a few days later. He said that my picture was in the Saturday Evening Post, and my parents got the picture too. I think it was even present in the Fresno Bee. Anyway, my parents knew about it. So that's an experience to have your picture put in a magazine like that. They didn't mention my name in the picture.
Sure. When you look at it now, what does it make you think of?
Memories, lots of memories, Paul. You know, this happened over 70 years ago. It's just hard to believe that 70 years have passed since then. It's just, and you know, as I get older, I think more about it than I did when I was young. I didn't even want to talk about it that much. But now these memories are all very vivid. As if I was just there right now. It's a feeling that you never forget, I guess.
And your Navy experience was far from over there. But while we're on that topic of 70 years later, all these things becoming fresh for you, one of the recent experiences you had was to visit the National World War II Memorial and other sites in Washington,
yes,
D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. Did that provide you opportunities to reflect on your friend Christensen or the ranger that you're carrying in that famous photo?
Yes, it did. It brought back a lot of memories to see the World War II memorial there with thousands of stars on it. And each star represented people who had lost their lives in the war. I thought of the magnitude of that and how many men gave their lives. Quite a feeling, yes. And also, when I visited the other memorials, I felt the same way at the Vietnam Memorial and at the Korean Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just can't help but think about all the men. You know, you just can't help but think about all the men that sacrificed their life, and here I am, all right, you know.
In remarkable shape at 91 and still playing your violin.
In my Sunday school class, adult Sunday school class, as a man that was a guardian on the flight before the one I went on.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and he knew my story. He said, I want to give you an application. And I got accepted right away. And I went on the next flight. And that was a wonderful experience. So many people came out to the airport. And women were coming out of the crowd to kiss us. And it was quite an experience.
What was the most meaningful part of that experience for you?
The high point of that whole trip for me, and it was an exciting trip all the way around, was to meet men that I fought alongside of and didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Sit and eat with them at dinner time. I remember one man said, you know, when we were even in Iwo Jima, our ship was a destroyer. I was on a destroyer. It eventually got hit by a kamikaze, lost the ship, but he survived. But talking about the battle for Iwo Jima, knowing that we were just side by side there, that close,
mm-hmm.
and never knew each other. And then another one that was with me on a ship, it was real close to our ship and knew the Texas well, at Normandy, at the invasion of Normandy. Just to be able to be with the guys that were that close to me was the high point of my trip. It was wonderful to be able to meet with people that were all up in their upper 80s or lower 90s and reminisce about the war. And there were 70 of us,
mm-hmm.
plus the guardians. There were 70 guardians. Each vet had to have a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
We could not be out of his sight 1 minute.
Nope. You get a lot of demerits for that. Well, I know I'm bouncing around here, but let's go back to the Texas. So you survived that Cherbourg mission. And now I'm curious, because you mentioned that you did know that first sailor on your ship who was killed, mm-hmm. Christensen. How did you guys memorialize him on the ship? Did you have a service for him with a flag-draped coffin and all
yes,
that?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. And they did taps. But I don't think he was buried at sea. I think they took him off the ship and he was returned to his family. Lots of the people that died on a ship were buried at sea.
Yeah. I was wondering if you ever had to perform taps at a moment like that.
No, I didn't.
You think you could have done it?
Yeah, I think I probably could have. Wouldn't have been easy, but I probably could have.
Mm-hmm. And your ship wasn't done yet. You alluded to some of the spots that you would end up in the Pacific.
After that was secured there in France, we took our ship across to Plymouth, England, across mm-hmm. the channel, and got minor repairs that would get us safely back to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I got a 30-day leave, so I went home for a month and came back to my ship. It was in the Brooklyn Navy Yards and been repaired and went aboard my ship, but I didn't know where we were going until a few days later. We went back down through the canal to the west coast, and we went right by my barracks. When I was stationed down in Panama, I was right on the canal bank. And I went by, saw my old barracks there. It was quite a feeling.
And you guys headed to Iwo Jima, and you were there shelling before the Marines hit the beaches.
Yes.
And here you had been, if there's two signature moments for forces hitting beaches in World War II, it's Omaha Beach on June 6th of 44 and Iwo Jima on February 19th.
That was terrible.
Worse than what you saw on D-Day.
Yeah, because I didn't actually see the troops landing. There was so much stuff in front of us that I just, you couldn't see them. But at Iwo Jima, we bombarded for 72 hours before I sent our troops in. And I remember I had binoculars and I was watching the landing. That really hurt to see our Marines go down and be mowed down. We thought we had it pretty safe for them to land, and they were all buried in, dug in. And we lost thousands and thousands of men. It's a terrible thing.
And maybe people don't realize that, but you just mentioned it. You were shelling for 3 days before they went in, and this is not that big of an island. So you guys had to believe you'd done a lot of damage.
Yeah, we thought we had.
But you didn't know those tunnels and all the
holes and buried there, but they sure came out. And a lot of the men I saw through the binoculars, we were out maybe a mile off the shore,
mm-hmm.
if that far. Close enough that I could see the men landing. Some of them never made it to the beach. They were shot in the water and then mowed down when they got on the beach. But we took it. We took the beach. A big sacrifice. I've always had a soft heart for the Marine. They were wonderful fighters.
And as Admiral Nimitz famously said, for those Marines in World War II, uncommon valor was a common virtue. More than 6,800 Americans died in that battle at Iwo Jima. Time for another break, but when we come back, the eye-opening conversation Leon had with his mother when he came home on leave. Coincidence or divine intervention? You can decide when Leon shares that amazing twist as we hear a little more of his 91-year-old fingers on that homemade violin. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.